Welcome to Hero Worship, the podcast where I interview big heroes from small places. Now, I know I've been away for a while, but I'm back and I'm going to try to keep things a little more regular. I ran into a few scheduling problems, as happens with working class people. They don't have a lot of time on their hands, it turns out. But we will get to making those schedules click, and I will get more episodes out there. Now I want to start out this episode with a new feature that I'm just going to call Shout Out, where I thank random heroes from my past who I may or may not be in contact with anymore, but that inspired me in some way or another at some point in my life. So this week's shout-out goes to Terry Neal. He was my store manager at Burger King in Beloit that I worked at in high school. And this shout-out goes to him because he inspired me to, because he was always taking care of his friends, putting others before himself. And he always tried to give me good advice and be a role model in general. I was 16, 17 or whatever, and I didn't know a whole lot in the world, you know, just kind of fresh out into it. And, you know, he was always good about showing me the ropes and, being very patient with me and, you know, considering how much of a square I was at the time. So, yeah, thanks, Terry Neal. Now, this episode is going to be a little different. It's not going to be in the same quite the same format as... as normal with the interview style. So this week we're going to actually read into my grandpa's document that we've mentioned a few times in past episodes. So to help me out with this, I got my sister Mel to record the questions, and I record the answers. So to give you a little bit of context, this document was actually something that my Aunt Linda sent to my Grandpa LeBaron, just as a, you know, kind of way to, get some details out of his life down that she might want to look back at later. So, just a forewarning to anyone that's listening, like, you know, they're both Christian people, and there's a lot of Christian messages in here. And I decided that I wasn't going to edit anything to be any certain perspective. You know, I just want to leave it clean, leave it open, and just understand that, there's some views in here that you may or may not agree with, but that's fine. This isn't necessarily a political podcast. It's more just stories. So, it's a really great document that, you know, really captures, kind of just a moment in time in the world. You know, my grandpa grew up during the Depression, so there's, you know, things that his family didn't have at first that they gained. And, I just thought that in general, it was a really compelling story that grandpa was telling through this document. It seemed to me like it was pretty clear that he knew that at least someone was going to be looking at this later, and he put a lot of details into it. So I'm going to try to do it some justice. I did a little bit of editing as I went along so that, you know, it rolls out the tongue a little better, because he did originally type this out. But it's got a lot of really, really cool life lessons in there. Whether or not you're a person of faith, it's not, you know, it's obviously not all about that. I mean, it's about his life. But there's a lot of really good stories, and I hope you enjoy it. Shout out to the LeBaron family. I am looking forward to seeing you this weekend at the family reunion. And I hope you appreciate this podcast, as I know a lot of you knew Keith LeBaron. And this is just going to be the first part out of two. And hopefully I'll get that second part done for you as soon as I can. I really hope you enjoy it. And let me know what you think. Grandpa LeBaron and the Readers of the Lost Doc, Part 1.
What did you enjoy doing as a child? Did you prefer doing it alone or with someone else?
Like every little boy, I enjoyed playing in the sandbox with my cast iron toys. The neighbor boys would bring their toys over and we would have a lot of fun. The kids would play kick the can and games like that in the street. There wasn't much automobile traffic back then. When we would go over to Elizabeth to visit my Grandpa Evans, I would jump out of the car and head down the street to the dump. Ronnie would come down, as would my cousin Jerry. We would pry things out of the rubble that we thought would be fun to play with or take apart. When we lived in Cedarville, we got acquainted with the kids there and had fun in a very small rural setting. The small schoolhouse was just up the hill for us. I used to help the neighbor lady take care of her chickens. When they would be gone, I would feed and water the chickens and gather the eggs. Her husband delivered feed. I used to ride along with him sometimes. We would always stop at the filling station where he bought me a bottle of pop or a small bottle of milk. There was a Swiss cheese factory near us. I knew the kid that lived there. One time, I went down there and he showed me around while they were making cheese. They used huge copper kettles to make the cheese in. They had a large curing room there. One time, his dad showed us through the curing room and had a tool that he used to remove a plug of Swiss cheese so that I could taste it. He then put the rind end of the plug back into the hole. There was a nice little creek running through there, and we had a swimming hole where we would go every day during the summer. I still remember the green-vested swimming suit that I had. I was told that it had been my dad's. Everyone else just had trunks or an old pair of cut-off jeans. Sue was born while we lived in Cedarville. We moved back to Freeport the following year onto Shawnee Street. We had to wait until the electricians installed electricity because the house still had gas lights at the time. We were only a few blocks from where we had lived on Garden Street, and we would go over to Garden Street to play with the kids that we knew, until we got acquainted with the kids in our new neighborhood. We played in our yard a lot of the time. We had a big yard. A man used to walk by our house about the same time every afternoon. One afternoon, I asked him if he lived nearby because he always went past our place. He said no, that he was walking to work out on the railroad. He said that if I wanted to see the trains, I should stop out sometime. I started going out to East Junction very soon after, and did so until I started working on the railroad at age 15. I would spend my summers out there and didn't play much with the kids then.
Who gave you your name and why? Did you have a nickname? How did you get it?
Mom and Dad had considered the name Basil for me. I'm glad that they scrapped that one. They also had come up with the name of Kenneth. A friend of theirs was named Kenneth. Finally, they decided on Keith Evan LeBaron. Mom had wished she would have used her maiden name Evans for my middle name rather than what they used. When I was hanging around the railroad at East Junction, I was a youngster and could only look out of the lower pane of the windows. The guy that was teaching me telegraphy, Max Hiller, started calling me Shorty. It stuck around the railroad. It was only around the railroad that people called me Shorty. None of my family or other kids ever called me Shorty.
Describe your childhood home. What was your favorite room?
I don't know that I had a favorite room. Back then, a lot of activity was held in the kitchen, the living room, and sometimes the dining room. When I was younger, I would guess that the kitchen may have been the favorite room because of all the activity there. We would eat there, we played cards at the kitchen table. If we made a batch of popcorn, which we did frequently, we started in the kitchen and then took the large metal container full of popcorn, and sometimes we'd go in the living room and listen to the radio and visit with family and friends. After we got our first TV set in about 1950, the living room was the center of the house because that's where the TV was at. The kids' bedrooms, too, were upstairs. Ronnie and I shared one room, which was unheated, while Sandra and Sue shared the other room, which had heat. The bathroom upstairs did not have hot water. We would heat up a galvanized pail of water and carry it upstairs and dump it into the bathtub and add some cold water. Ronnie and I shared one tub of water. We would take turns as to who was first. When I started working for the railroad, I bought Mom and Dad a water heater for the house. That was great. They had their friend Mr. Merrill remodel the bathroom. Then we could take a shower anytime we wished. No more Saturday night baths.
Were you baptized or dedicated as an infant? If so, where and by whom?
I was baptized on 7 April 1935 at Embury Methodist Church in Freeport, Illinois, by Reverend Bloomquist.
Did you attend church as a young boy? What are your earliest memories of church?
I have no recollection of attending church as a youngster. Undoubtedly, I did attend. I think I attended Sunday school as a youngster. My dad made me go to church every time the doors were open when he was a child, and consequently, he developed a dislike for attending church activities. I guess you would have to have a better understanding of my grandfather, Roscoe LeBaron. He was the Sunday school superintendent of Sunday school much of my dad's life at home. There is no excuse why my dad felt that way. However, I have seen very zealous parents push their kids to this very thing. I feel that my grandparents didn't do a good job in communicating the importance of attending church or Sunday school. I doubt that my grandmother had any input on this issue. When us kids were little, not even all of us here yet, my grandfather and grandmother LeBaron would buy us a pair of shoes only if the folks promised that we would wear them to Sunday school. I remember that very clearly. So, I was taken to or sent to Sunday school. I remember when I was maybe 12 years old that I had attended Sunday school every Sunday for something like 12 weeks. I didn't really know what was going on. Then, one Sunday, my entire Sunday school class was before the congregation being sworn in as members of the church. I was none too happy about that. I felt that I had been railroaded. I quit attending Sunday school. When I was in junior high, I remember the Gideons giving those that wanted one a small New Testament of the Bible. I remember reading that off, and when I worked nights on the railroad as a young man, even as you lay asleep in your own bed at home. Before your mother and I were married, I had to take instruction to become a member of the Emmanuel Lutheran Church. This was a cram course, but it was good for me. I started attending church then, and I continue to this day.
Where did your father go to work every day, and what did he do? Did his work interest you?
I was born during the Depression. My dad would work a day here and a day there. He got on the WPA, building what they called wing dams on the Mississippi River. They had areas blocked off where crews with pick and shovels scooping up earth for the foundations of these wing dams. When I was school age, Dad worked at Woodmance Manufacturing Company here in Freeport. He learned sheet metal working there where they made windmills. He used to walk to and from work and carried his lunch in the old-fashioned lunch bucket. I would run down the street when I saw him coming up the hill, and he would give me a half a bologna sandwich that he had left. I remember one day he came home and told Mom that he quit his job. Mom said the landlord was over this morning and told me he has sold his house and we have to move. I can only guess that things got hectic then. Dad got into Fairbanks Morse then. They were making diesel engines for PT boats for World War II. Dad found a house that we rented in Cedarville. By the time I was old enough to have an interest in someone's work, I'd already chosen what I wanted to do to earn a living. I started working on the Illinois Central at a young age of 15.
Did your mother have a job, or did she work at home?
Mom had three kids at home and one on the way. She was very busy doing canning and things like that at home. She was quite busy being a mother. When the hobos came to the door looking for a handout, Mom always made them an egg sandwich and gave them a cold glass of milk, and they would sit out on the porch and eat their lunch. It was not until some years later that she started working part-time in the evening when Dad was home. She then got a full-time job at the Burgess Battery Company a bit later.
What was your favorite sport or outdoor activity? Why was it your favorite?
We would play baseball, football, and shoot baskets in the streets under the streetlights. We had some grassy areas where we could also play. We used to wrestle and box, too. I enjoyed doing that. You might say that I enjoyed fighting with the other kids in the neighborhood. Sometimes you would win, and sometimes you would lose. I remember my grandfather Evans telling me that the bigger they are, the harder they fall. That may have been true for him because he was a big man, but I found that the bigger kids were harder to take down. I did get good at sidestepping someone when they rushed at me, grabbing their arm and throwing them down on their back, knocking the wind out of them. The first time I did that to Ronnie, I thought I had killed him. I was scared. My coordination was never good enough for other sports in school. I gave football and baseball a try and threw in the towel.
Did you pray as a young boy? If so, can you remember a specific prayer? Who taught you how to pray?
We always prayed at bedtime. I don't remember if it was Mom or Dad that taught us to pray. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. As we got older, we learned the Lord's Prayer. We did not say grace at our meals, as I recall.
Where was your childhood home located? Did you enjoy living there?
Like all little kids, we lived in a number of places that I do not remember when I was small. We lived over at 834 East Garden Street here in Freeport when I started school. How long we lived there before I started school, I don't remember. That is the first place I can relate to. I had a lot of neighborhood kids to play with, and we had a nice location. We used to play in the streets in the early evening. In the winter, since it was on a hill, we had fun sledding. I remember riding down the hill about 2 to 3 blocks on a huge bobsled that the big kids had. That was fun. We had a big garden. A farmer would come in with a team of horses and plow our garden, and Mom and Dad would take care of it. I remember one year that Mom even canned ketchup in pop bottles. It was good. Jam and jellies were also good. We were taught to eat our veggies, too. Somewhere along the line, I got the idea that I did not eat meat. I don't know how long that went on. I ate turkeys on the holidays, though. I think I know what may have happened. One holiday, my Aunt Harriet added chopped beef to the dressing. Now, dressing was my favorite food. I was faced with trying to pick out these tiny little pieces of beef, an exercise in futility. I didn't eat the dressing. Similarly, when we switched over to margarine, I lost a taste for butter, and it was many years before I would eat butter again.
Describe your grandparents. What did you enjoy most about them?
My favorite grandparent was my Grandpa Evans. He was very warm and friendly. He would buy us an ice cream cone uptown in Elizabeth. He showed us boys how to carve arrows out of wooden roofing shingles and balance them and shoot them with a string on a stick. He came to our house to visit. My Grandma Evans died when my mother was only 14 years old. I sensed that my grandma and Grandpa LeBaron had advised my parents that it was their job to raise us. I only recall rare times when my grandma and Grandpa LeBaron watched us kids. They were always good to us. We would go down to visit, and Grandma would give us each a homemade tablet, made from brown paper bags or butcher paper. They had a lavatory in their bathroom, and we got away with playing in it. We always had nice family meals there, too. Grandma was an excellent cook. I think when they ran a restaurant, Grandma did all the work, and Grandpa visited and took care of the cash register. My grandfather was a very religious man. He worked at the ICRR roundhouse briefly. The railroaders would really start cussing when they got around Grandpa because they knew it got under his skin. He quit.
Can you remember being afraid as a boy? What was your greatest fear? How did you deal with it?
Probably the greatest fear that I ever had was that of height. Elevators were never on my hit list either, probably for the same reason, fear of falling. When I was small, I hung on to my mother on an elevator. We would get off the elevator at the floor we wanted, and I walked on the inside wall of the hallway. That apprehension has not changed to this day. I have no fear of flying. I will climb a ladder, but not very high. In junior high school, I remember climbing a rope from the floor to the ceiling in a gym, and that didn't bother me. I always had motion sickness problems riding in a car. When we would go to Elizabeth, we carried a coffee can in the back seat so that I could barf on the way out. In traveling, I always used Dramamine to ward off motion sickness. No rides at the fair, either. Joanne and I went on a Ferris wheel when we were dating. That was not fun for me.
Recall for me 5 of the most important life lessons you have learned.
Humility is something that I am much better at than as a younger person. I am trying to accept that I am not always right. It is not easy, but I like it when I see it in others, so I'm going for it. Learning how to give out compliments is a good effort. I continue to fight off the urge to quickly cut someone down when they misspeak. As a kid, I saw adults always looking for the opportunity to be quick with the cutting comeback. Being humble and complimentary are good attributes. I find it as a way to make friends. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Linda, that really boils it all down into one very difficult challenge to every one of us. We all fail at different times in this, what would be a simple thing. If you don't want to get poked with a stick, don't poke anyone with a stick. Not only are we not to do it, we are not to even think of doing it. Sometimes our heart and our mind are not on the same page. We have a big nice book, which we call the Holy Bible, that is chock full of examples of how people, and we are people, fail to do what God wants and expects of us. We all fall short of the glory of God. Only Jesus has followed his Father's commandments. and he was tested by the devil in every way. The most important thing that I want you to get from this is that you and I are not perfect. We never will be. But Jesus loves us. Paul tells us to be Christ-like. We are to be imitators of Christ. Another thing I have learned is to be truthful, no matter how much it hurts or will hurt. I have also learned that a closed mouth catches no flies. If you cannot say a good word, then do not speak. As you are on the last mile of your journey, you can look back and readily see where the Lord has carried you much of your life. I just marvel at all he has done for me. I'm not trying to preach. I will leave that to your brother. As you get down to the end of the road, you realize that you probably have changed your ways numerous times in your life. Looking closely, you will see that as time goes on, you are adjusting your way of living more in the way we were meant to live. What used to be a big deal is meaningless to us later on. What is a big deal today is something we didn't even think about yesterday. I like to think that everyone is better today than they were years ago. I realize that this is untrue for some of us. For some of us are sheep and some of us are goats.
Did the pastor or a visiting missionary ever eat at your house? Did they have an impact on your life?
I certainly have no recollection of our pastor or a visiting missionary ever eating at home with our family as a child, when you were a child, or when Brian was a child. My grandmother LeBaron's second husband, Atmore Woodrow, was a minister, and he ate at our home many times during holiday family gatherings. When you were small and living with your mom and Donald Kroom, we started saying grace at mealtimes. We continue to do so. Nowadays, I do my devotions immediately after eating my breakfast. I sip on my coffee as I do so.
Did you ever feel that God had a special calling for you?
Not as a youngster or teenager. Very early in my life, I had a feeling that I was a child of God and that I must act accordingly. I have served on a number of committees in our church in the past and also served several times on the church council. I have maintained our sound system for nearly 50 years. I maintained our electric organ when we had one. I have helped with other chores at church with the feeling that I am a servant of God. Joanne and I have attended many Bible studies over the years. A couple of them were quite extensive, taking 2 years to complete them. We learned to go door to door witnessing for Jesus Christ. Not an easy task, but when you know that the Lord will put the right words in your mouth, you feel confident. My calling is no different than yours, or anyone else for that matter. Obviously, Brian has what I would consider a special calling to serve as a minister for the Lord.
How far did you have to travel to attend elementary, junior high, and high school, and how did you get there?
Perhaps 5 blocks to elementary school, 8 to 10 blocks to junior high, and a mile to high school. We walked to school regardless of the weather. We simply dressed accordingly.
Who gave you your first Bible, and how old were you when you got it? How did it influence your life?
I no longer recall where my first Bible came from. It may have been given to me by the church. I did get the Gideon New Testament in junior high. I know we had a Bible in the home when you were born. I have always had access to a Bible. I have a Harper's RSV study Bible that I have had for many years. It is my favorite Bible because I have used it for so long and I know how to use the help/study features that it contains. There are many websites where you can look up verses in various versions of the Bible. I keep one Bible on the kitchen table to use with my devotions. It really doesn't matter what kind of Bible you have or who gave it to you. What does matter is that you read it and study your Bible so that you may strive to be Christ-like. We are to live our lives as Christ lived his life. We have one hang-up that he did not have. We have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. But Jesus chose us just as we are.
When did you become a Christian?
I became a Christian the moment I was baptized. My parents and my church accepted me as a member of Christ's family the moment I was baptized. Again, I was chosen by Christ, and by his grace, I have been saved.
When you were growing up, did you have any animals? What were their names? Was it important to you to have a pet?
I first had a dog when I was quite young. I don't know its name. I then had a cat that I called Spot. She got bumped by a car and ran under the old summer kitchen on Garden Street and was never seen again. I had many other dogs as time went on. Us kids always enjoyed having a pet. Was having a pet important to us? Well, I guess we may have thought so, but more importantly, our mom and dad allowed us to have a pet so we could learn the responsibility of caring for a pet, or trying to do so.
Tell me about your mother's cooking. Can you recall your favorite meal? What made it your favorite?
When my mom made turkey, dressing, and all that goes with it, plus homemade pies, that was good eating. My mother was an excellent cook. It didn't matter what she made for our meals. One thing I will always remember is that on Saturday we had northern beans for dinner. We had leftovers for another day. During the war, we didn't always have meat for meals. Another thing that I still like is that when cheese was starting to get old, she would cut off the mold and then dice up the cheese in a frying pan and melt it until you had to scrape it off the bottom of the pan. That was a great Welsh treat for us. When my grandmother Evans died, Mom was only 14, and she began cooking for her father and three big brothers. When she lived above the restaurant in Woodbine, where I was born, I'm sure that she helped in the kitchen with my grandmother LeBaron. She always said that Grandpa LeBaron complained that when she peeled potatoes, she had too thick of peelings. Mom was always getting recipes from her friends, so we had a good variety of things to eat. When it came to her cooking, I am a testimony to her good cooking. There has yet to be a better cook to be born.
Did you ever get into fights with other kids? Did you ever start or stop a fight?
I really didn't get into any fighting until we moved on to Shawnee Street. I don't know if it was the location or just my age. Anyway, yes, I got into a number of fights. I had enjoyed boxing while in junior high. Street fighting was a bit of everything. Most of the time, I did not start the fight. I almost always won because I was big for my age. I remember starting a fight with a kid and he won. I do not recall why I started the fight because he and I were friends. Mostly, I just defended myself as needed. One good thing there in the Third Ward was that while I had a guy down on the ground, it was not unusual that an older brother was in the crowd. I never saw an older brother step in to help his younger brother. I guess it was that if you picked a fight, it was your fight.
What chores did you have to do when you were growing up? Did you get an allowance? If so, how much was it?
I had to pull weeds out of the garden and mow the lawn. It needed to be raked in the fall. Then it was time to shovel the sidewalks. Inside, all of us helped with doing the dishes or took turns with doing the dishes. I helped my dad a lot with odds and ends around the house. I remember helping dad rebuild our local burning furnace into a gas furnace. The cast iron plenum was all dad and I could do to lift it into place. Another time, I remember Uncle Evan wanting soft water for something and the old pump in the kitchen would not pump water. Uncle Evan went out and took the lid off the cistern and bent over the opening with a pail to draw the water when his denture fell out of his shirt pocket into the cistern. Dad was working for Standard Oil Company at the time and brought home a hand pump with a long tube on it and we placed it over the cistern. Yes, I had to pump it dry. Then I had to go down into the cistern and find Uncle Evan's denture. When I got back up, Dad decided that it was a good time to start filling in the cistern. We put ashes and other trash down there until it was full. We then broke off the neck of the cistern and capped it off with concrete. I don't know if I ever got an allowance because I started out with a paper route and started working at a young age to earn a few dollars here and there. By the time I was 15, I was buying my own clothes and shoes.
Who gave you your first job? What kind of job was it? How much money did you make?
Probably my first job was that of mowing my grandmother LeBaron's lawn after my grandfather passed away. I earned a dollar each time I mowed. That was done with a real mower that you pushed and the lawn was large. My next job was as a paperboy, delivering the local paper, starting the route at the edge of downtown. I had it for less than a year. It was getting close to the end of the year, and I didn't want to go around the route and hand out calendars and get money donations from the customers, so I gave the route to my brother, Ronnie. Later, I started working part-time at the gas station in the Third Ward, which was run by the Pizzolatto brothers, Tony, Leo, and Joe. At that time, Joe was married to my cousin, Darlene Romer. I worked there for quite some time. About the same time I started working at the gas station, I started to work for the Illinois Central Railroad. I worked there until 1955. I quit the railroad and went to work at MicroSwitch at the minimum wage, taking quite a cut in pay from the railroad, hoping to get in the lab at MicroSwitch. It took me about 6 months in the adjusting department before I was able to transfer into the lab. I continued studying and working hard, and after nearly 40 years at MicroSwitch, I retired as a principal engineer. Now I can't even do my own work around the house.
Share your idea of what makes a good friend.
A friend in need is a friend indeed. Truer words were never spoken. Generally, someone becomes your friend when you have common interests, you have gone to school together, hung around together somewhere in your life, or some common thread, even health issues. As time goes on, you eventually learn who your true friends are. When you are having a problem, it doesn't matter what kind of problem, those about you that come forward to lend a helping hand are truly your friends. If you have the need of something and you have a friend that you know that can satisfy that need, and that person chooses not to do so for no apparent reason, that person is no longer your friend. I have friends where we can help each other on the same topic, and this is nice. You can sound out your thoughts with that person, and they will either agree with you or disagree with you. Further, if they disagree, they will quickly point out where they think that you are off target in your thoughts. Sometimes your friendship is based on one thing, but you or your friend needs help in a different field, that you can solve their problem or guide them through their problem, or conversely, they can solve your problem or guide you through your problem. Bottom line, a friend in need is a friend indeed. It always works both ways.
Describe your favorite pastime or hobby as a child.
I remember when we were quite small, Ronnie and I, we were out to Elizabeth and Grandpa Evans showed us, my cousin Jerry Evans too, how to make arrows out of wooden shake shingles. We would take a slice of a shingle, about 1.5 inches wide and full length, and we would carve a point on the thick end of the material. We would cut a taper behind the arrowhead out of the material, leaving about 3/8 inch to 1/2 inch behind the taper out toward the narrower thickness. About 2.5 inches from the end, we would taper the shaft out to full width so that it served as feathers on our arrow. We would then balance the arrow on a finger to find where it would balance, and there we would cut a narrow notch in the shaft so that we could put a string into the notch. The string was tied to a stick, and there was a knot tied in the end of the string. We would then lay the string in the notch, and then pull the stick until the knot was tight against the shaft, and then, with the hand holding the stick, give it a strong pull or jerk, and release the arrow as we did it. The arrows flew through the air a good distance, so we had to be careful. I never saw that done anywhere else. It was fun carving the arrows. I'm going to guess that it was probably about 11 years old, because that's when I got my first pocket knife. I guess what I enjoyed most as a child was going out to East Junction and watching the trains and learning to telegraph. I was only 12 years old when I started out doing that. In the beginning, I simply went out to see the trains go by and visit with the operator on duty. Most of the time, this man was Max Hiller, who always walked past our house on his way to work. When he wasn't busy, he would talk about his work in the past. He had started out as a telegraph operator aboard a ship in the Great Lakes. As time went on, he would show me how to do things around the office. I learned how to throw the switches, how to copy train orders, how to hand up train orders, and he started teaching me to telegraph. I'm still learning. This is what I did while the other kids my age were out fishing, hiking, etc. As a kid, we always played cards. This was especially a popular activity during the cold winter months. When we lived down on Shawnee Street, a bunch of boys would gather in the basement of the Hannah's and play cards and eat popcorn. We always played strictly for fun.
What mischievous prank did you pull on someone? How did it affect you?
You should have asked me that one 30 or 40 years ago. I am so far past the prank age that I no longer recall any of them. There is no question in my mind that I did do that sort of thing. The only one that comes to my mind was when I was living in Cedarville. My cousin Donna Romer, Cone, was watching us kids and she wasn't paying much attention to us. Her boyfriend was there. So I squeezed into one side of the dining room buffet and pulled the door closed and stayed in there for 30 minutes or so while she was looking for me. I then opened the door and asked her if she was looking for me.
Did you have a television when you were growing up? What was your favorite program and why?
We got our first TV set when I was perhaps a sophomore in high school. One of our favorite programs was Toast of the Town, which was later known as The Ed Sullivan Show. Wannabe stars were seen there first. I think Elvis Presley and a host of others were first seen on this program. Our next choices were likely shows that had once been on radio, such as the Jack Benny Show. I enjoyed westerns back then, too.
What were some crazy fads from your school days? Did you participate in them? Why or why not?
One fad that stood out in mind was when I was a sophomore, the boys started to wear white Bucks shoes. There was no way I was going to wear white shoes. I was not someone that followed the fashion trend at school, so I went to the surplus store and bought a pair of engineer black boots. They were the only pair of boots I ever owned. There were many fads while I was in high school, but I tended to ignore the system because it would have been costly to follow them. I was not raised to have something just because someone else had it. To do as the Jones do was not part of my rearing.
Who was your favorite teacher? How did that teacher influence your life?
There was no question that Dick Fowley was my favorite teacher because he taught electronics in high school and that was my favorite subject. He was an excellent teacher and he was a good role model as well when I left the railroad and went to Microswitch, planning to get into electronics. After 6 months at Microswitch, I finally got transferred into the lab. The rest is history. Dick Fowley left Freeport not too many years after I graduated and went back to school and earned his PhD. His wife, Arlene, was a nurse, and she had an occasion to meet you when she was a school nurse in Bremerton, Washington, where they still live. I am still in contact with Dick, and he is now 85 years of age. He was my inspiration to enter into electronics. He tried to get me to go to college, but I was too stubborn and continued to work on the railroad. Shortly before my 21st birthday, I left the railroad.
In high school, what extracurricular activity did you enjoy most? Why did you choose those activities?
Well, I was in the Freeport High School Amateur Radio Club. I had a strong interest in amateur radio. Everett Ellsworth, a telegrapher and also a ham radio operator, got me interested in amateur radio. He started me building a radio from scratch, but at Christmas time he gave me a Meisner radio kit, which I built. It was a lot of fun listening to code on the radio. I got my radio license when I was a sophomore. We had an excellent amateur radio station in the radio shop at the high school. It was Dick Fowley's year in teaching it at FHS, and somehow he got the school board to buy an amateur radio station from one of the hams in town. He had the latest and best equipment, and he also had an old kilowatt homemade transmitter that he had built. A number of hams in Freeport, including Everett Ellsworth, had worked on it since it was quite a project. I've had my amateur radio license for 59 years now.
What is the nicest thing you ever did for your mother or father?
When I first started working on the railroad while in high school, I had some money left on payday and bought them a water heater for the house. It may not seem like much, but Mom used to have to go down in the basement on Sunday night and fill up a big copper boiler with water for washing clothes on Monday. The boiler was on a two-burner stove, which was lit with a match, and it took all night for the water to get hot for washing clothes. We had been heating a big pail of water to get ready for a bath, which was generally Saturday night. Two kids had to wash in one batch of water. After we plumbed in the hot water, we could draw bath water at any time. On another payday, I bought them a hi-fi radio phonograph. We all enjoyed that. While these are material things, they certainly made life easier for my mother and father. I provided them with a granddaughter, you, on February 23rd, 1954. It was not until March 7th, 1961 that I presented them with a grandson, Brian. My parents were always happy and proud of their grandchildren.
When did you have your first date? Tell me about that.
Well, I was just under 16 when I had my first date. Since my first date was with your mother, I'll tell you about that later.
What do you remember about your first kiss?
When I was about 9 years old, I liked a little girl that lived up the street from us. As we were walking towards the house, I gave her a kiss. I remember nothing more about it.
Share some of your insights with working well with others.
I feel that I must be honest, truthful, thoughtful, kind, and sincere with them. I feel that it is necessary to build up their trust in what I say and do. Dialogue is key to accomplishing these things. I need to be able to convey to them where I stand, but if they have an alternative solution or a way to accomplish something, that I am open to their thoughts. Communications between people is necessary to establish trust in each other.
Did you enjoy reading as a boy? What were some of the most memorable books you read?
I remember that I used to walk down to the Henney Library in the Third Ward to get books to read. There were a few authors that wrote a series of books that were enjoyable. One was The Bobbsey Twins. I have no recollection what these stories were, but I remember enjoying them. I think they may have been adventure stories. When I was young, we used to play outside all summer long, going on hikes, etc. We used to pack a lunch and take a hike. I suspect that some of this may have been fueled by the adventure stories we read. End of part one. Thank you for listening to Hero Worship. Special thanks to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard for the music. For more information or to let us know what you think, visit soundcloud.com/heroworshippodcast. Please join us next time, and remember, if you have a hero in your life, make sure you let them know it. This has been a Revolver Audio production. Executive producer Brad LeBaron. For more podcasts, visit soundcloud.com/revolveraudio. Or to support new content, visit ko-fi.com/revolveraudio. Revolver.